Good day, Hacker Public Radio audience. Welcome to the first episode of Tales from the Kitchen. My name is Dan Washko, your host, and you might recognize me from earlier HPR shows such as Linux in the Shell and the Linux Boot Process, although those were many years ago. Or you might recognize me from the Linux Link Tech Show or Linux in the House. If you are familiar with TLLTS, the name of this show might ring a bell. Lord Drakenblut, late great Lord Drakenblut, used to preface a segment on the show called Tales from the Kitchen, asking me questions about my work in DevOps, particularly with Chef. This is not that show. Nope, this is more of a show on culinary adventures. Is a little different than just a pure cooking show, although there's going to be a lot of that in there. But I have been cooking for many years now, and I love it. And everybody has said, you should do a cooking show, my friends. Maybe not everybody. But I figured, why not give it a shot? I'm not going to be overloading you with recipes, things like that. It's going to be more or less concepts and little tips and tricks that I have picked up over the years. So you might be asking yourself, why do I feel qualified to do a show like this? Maybe I'm not. I'll leave that up for you, but I figured I'd just have fun with it. That's what it's all about. So for this first episode, I'm not going to talk about techniques or anything like that. Nope. Instead, I'm going to talk about the most memorable meals that I have had, and why they are memorable for me, and why they brought me to where I am here today. Now, I am 49 years old, born in 1972. That's a lot of doc dropping, but here we go. My mother, wonderful person. She was great. All my neighborhood friends loved her, very sociable. Unfortunately, when I was 3 years old, she got hit with a serious bout of systemic lupus, put her in the hospital. She went in, a rather average-sized woman for her age, in the late 20s, early 30s, I think, probably late 20s, and she came out 6 months later completely unrecognizable to me. They had put her on so many steroids and all this medication that she ballooned in weight and looked like a completely, totally different person. Shattered her self-image, and she had to work really hard the rest of her life to get a lot of that back. Now, that being said, she was not able to follow a normal lifestyle. And one of the things that she was very restricted on was her diet. She could not have sugar. She could not have salt. She could not have fat. Three of the things that make food extremely pleasurable in eating. And this was a very tough thing for her as a cook. So as wonderful as my mother was, she was a horrible cook. She really wasn't that great of a cook beforehand. She grew up in a fairly affluent home in that period of time, and they had a housekeeper that made a lot of their meals. So she was never exposed to cooking. I was exposed to some cooking from her, although it really wasn't the best kind of cooking. And probably the single most memorable meal I have ever had, and it carries with me to this day, were baked pork chops and lima beans. I don't know where she got the recipe. I think it was on the back of a thing of dried lima beans. I don't know. But it was the most disgusting thing I have ever recalled eating. It turned me off lima beans to this very day. I am afraid to eat lima beans. It's really weird. For some reason, that is the one thing that I am hesitant to eat. Succotash, which is corn and lima beans, will not eat it. Big thing going around when I was a teenager was making baked beans with lima beans. Will not eat it. I don't like lima beans because of that one meal. Now, pork chops, on the other hand, I love pork chops today, but they have to be done right. Pork chops, very dry in that lima bean and pork chop bake mix there. It was dry, okay? There was shoe leather dry. Okay. So having a meal that right there when I was probably 7 or 8, that formed my impression of those two foods to this very day, pork chops and lima beans. And that, you know, a similar experience was, I love macaroni and cheese. I love Kraft macaroni and cheese, or Kraft as they call it in Canada. But my mom would always make macaroni and cheese with stewed tomatoes. And at the age I was, again, around 6 or 7, she would try and mix in the stewed tomatoes with my macaroni and cheese. And I didn't like it. I wanted macaroni and cheese. I didn't want stewed tomatoes. And to this day, I love tomatoes. I love working with tomatoes. I love all kinds of tomatoes. I am very hesitant to try stewed tomatoes, and I will not have stewed tomatoes with macaroni and cheese of any sort. I like tomatoes. I like macaroni and cheese. If you mix tomatoes with macaroni and cheese, that's pretty good. If you mix stewed tomatoes with it, So it's interesting that our very early formative experiences with food dictate where we are later on in life in regards to food. Now, that is not necessarily always the case with everything. Like, for instance, olives. I don't know a single kid that likes olives. None of my kids like olives. I didn't like olives. But to this day, right now, over the past couple of years, I have probably eaten olives almost every day of the week. I love olives. I could put olives with anything. Olives with macaroni salad, that's amazing. I love it. Olives on a salad, olives in dishes. Now, unfortunately, the rest of my family will not eat olives, so I got to put them in where I can. So formative early years right there. Pork chops and lima beans destroyed me on lima beans. Another thing that I really remember as a child was fried shell tacos. There was a place my dad used to go after work. I didn't know what it was called at the time, but he would come home with these fried shell tacos. It was a flour shell where the beef is like a very, I would say, a dry beef, a dry mixture. It's not moist, or it's very dry, but it's not like a bad dry. It's good. It's very dried. And the cheese that they put inside there, I'm not exactly sure what kind of cheese it is. I always try and figure it out. But the cheese that they put in there, and they take toothpicks and they put it through the flour tortilla shell, and they put it in a deep fat fryer. And when it comes out, the shell is fried. The beef and cheese are a little melted together, and a little bit of that oil. And oh my goodness, it is the most amazing taco I have ever had in my entire life. These things, and they're huge, right? They're like the size of like little footballs. If you throw in the lettuce and the tomato and the jalapenos and all that stuff, these are fantastic. And I must have been 4 or 5 years old, I think it was, probably closer to 5, when I first had these. And then they just disappeared in my life for almost 30 years. I tried, especially when I started driving, I tried to scour the Lehigh Valley, different places, little taco shops, Italian restaurants that would sell tacos. The last thing I knew about these tacos was that we went to a restaurant probably around when I was 8. Again, everything seems to happen when I'm 7 or 8. It was called Poncho's and Sonny's. It was on South 4th Street. It was in the basement. Above was this club, I think it was. And downstairs was this like little Italian-Mexican restaurant. And they served these tacos there, but then they closed down. And for almost 30 years, I could not find them. And I went, that's why I would go to Italian restaurants, like little pizza places that would sell tacos, in hopes that I would find these things. And I got close to a place in Copley that had tacos similar to that. It just exactly wasn't the same thing. But about a few years after I left Pennsylvania and moved down here with my family, I was walking around, went back home, walking around Q-Mart, and there was this little restaurant. Q-Mart was a Quakertown farmer's market. It is like really interesting place that, I suspect it's probably like farmer's markets all over the country, but it was just this like huge warehouse, and then it was partitioned off into little shops, and that was like way back when I was a teenager. They used to have this like really awesome magazine comic book shop there where I would get Famous Monster magazine and back issues of Marvel Comics, and particularly Conan was my big thing at the time. They had a record shop there that had used and old records, and of course tons of food, like really good food there. The place smelled like Lebanon bologna and raw chicken when you walked in, right? It had that like really weird kind of neat smell, but it's a smell that you would, that stuck with me my entire life. It was such a memorable smell. But they had, as I've gone back there over the years, it's like everything, it just doesn't retain that same level of nostalgia. Shops are different, and I don't have the interest that I used to, but what still is there is the food and the butcher shops there and the bakeries. Really outstanding fare. And we were walking around through there, and there was this taco shop called General Zapata's. And I'm like, let's just check it out. And there on display was the taco I had been looking for 20 years, 20 plus years I had been looking for. And I got one, and it was just, it took me right back to how I remembered it, right back to my childhood. It was awesome. Got to talking to the guy. I learned that they've had a restaurant in Bethlehem, Pennsylvania, called General Zapata's. Now, a few years later, they had closed that restaurant in Q-Mart, but General Zapata's has still been open. The last time I went to Pennsylvania 2 years ago, that was one of our highlights of the trip, was to go to General Zapata's and get tacos, and we did do that. So as far as I know, they are still here today. And that was that taco, how simple that is. Just fried bread, a really low-cooked beef that is not wet. It is dry, and the cheese, and it's fried, and when it comes all together, a beautiful experience for something so simplistic. So simplistic. Now, my relationship with food growing up in my mom's household, my parents' household, because my dad was there too. My parents, when I was about the age of 7 or 8, started doing foster care because my mom couldn't work. And that was a little bit of a way to kind of give her something to do and bring in a little bit of money. And she was a fantastic mom. She was a mom. Like when my mom passed away, one of my friends posted she was a mom to us all on her obituary. And she was. And she would make large batches of food, Texas hash, I didn't like, spaghetti, which was pretty good, stuff like that. So I was nonplussed about food. But I got a job working in a restaurant when I was 15 as a busboy. So you could start at that age working in a restaurant. It was called the Camelot Restaurant. It was walking distance from my house. It was a standard fare, mid-80s restaurant, Greek restaurant. And the owners, Louie and Pete, wonderful people. I love that family was wonderful. They were wonderful people to work for. They always treated me, you know, respectfully, like almost like one of the family. I loved working with them. They also operate a restaurant, a diner called the Parkland Diner. And that was in Parkland in the Lehigh Valley. but I was working at the Camelot. And it was a medium, I don't know what you call it. It's not fine dining, but they had a banquet area, they had a bar, and they had the two, three different dining sections in there, not including the banquet area. And working in a restaurant really gave me a whole different perspective on food preparation and cleanliness. and people in general, not just the customers, but the people that I work for. Now, I will say this, a lot of the things that you hear about, the craziest things that go on in restaurants, absolutely true. But the one thing I never saw, and nobody ever even joked about doing this, was messing around with anybody's food. Nobody ever messed around with anybody's food. You just didn't do it. So there was a level of professionalism in there, but there was also a level of zaniness in there, you know, crazy stuff going on. I worked with a lot of Mexicans that had come up from Mexico with green cards, or maybe they didn't, I don't know at the time. And I got to be really good friends with these guys. Well, I mean, about as good of friends as I could being a teenager working in a restaurant with them. We'd hang out at the restaurant, we'd talk, we'd joke around, we'd have good times. They would tell me about their life, their families back home in Mexico. And, you know, this one guy, his name was Juan, really great guy. He was started as a dishwasher and then worked his way up to cook in there. And he was a school teacher in Mexico, but to come to the United States and work like this, he was making a lot more money. And so they would all live, like six of them, to an apartment, and they would work their asses off. Like, I never saw anybody work harder than these guys. They were in the restaurant first thing in the morning with the boss, and they were the last people to leave at the end of the night. And they put in a good 17-hour plus day there sometimes. And they were just fantastic guys to work with. Learned a lot from them. Learned a lot about their culture and stuff that they did. But there was food at this restaurant that I would never consider touching. And to this day, I am so thankful I have. Case in point, Fasolakia. It is a green bean dish. It's like a stewed green bean dish, made with tomatoes and carrots. It, depending, like I put carrots in it because they put carrots in there. And onions, and it's baked together. And when I looked at this, it reminded me of stewed tomatoes. But when I finally got the courage to try this, I was blown away. That right there, Fasolakia, was the one thing that started to turn my mind and my attitude about foods that I had tried as a kid, didn't like. Loved it. It got me interested in trying baklava. Like, you look at baklava, to me, dessert was something with chocolate or ice cream or a pudding that wasn't rice, or tapioca was acceptable. Something very sweet, chocolate, vanilla, whatever. But looking at Fasolakia, did not look like something I would like. I wasn't too keen on shoe fly pie when I was younger. I don't know why. I guess it just wasn't, like, I had a bad experience with it when I was younger. But then when I tried baklava, oh my goodness, that is like a slice of heaven on a plate. And they used to make baklava by the sheet pans of it. Man, there was tons of it because they had an early bird special from 3 o'clock to 6 o'clock. You come in, order off the early bird special. You have a choice of dessert between a piece of baklava or some rice pudding or jello, right? Rice pudding. They got me on the rice pudding. They made fantastic rice pudding. They also had chocolate mousse there, too. That was more of what I was used to dessert-wise there. But lamb, a leg of lamb. They would roast and have lamb regularly on the menu, but especially around Easter time. And that opened up like a whole new world of food to me that I've not been accustomed to, and that food can be really enjoyable. And that was great. We loved it. I loved working there. It was a fun experience. Then I graduated high school and I went off to college. And one of the things that I remember in our first apartment up in college with my friends, the first day that we moved in, we went grocery shopping. And that night, we just had chicken leg quarters. Threw some salt. My roommate, Jeff, threw some salt and pepper on them, put them in the oven, and baked them. And that's what we had for dinner that night. And I was like, this is great. Like, this isn't rice-a-roni or ramen or whatever. This was just simply chicken leg quarters with some salt and pepper in the oven. And to make it ourselves and to have bought it ourselves and to have eaten it in our own kitchen at the time and dining room, it was just a great experience. It was like the first time I ever remember, like, here I am on my own to an extent, and we made something that tasted fantastic. Like, I could do this. I could do this. And it was great. It was a wonderful experience that was soon to be destroyed or stopped for a while when I came home from class one day and my roommate tossed me this book and said, the Hare Krishnas were here today. They left this book. I thought you might be interested in it. And I read it. It was a book on vegetarianism and their ideas. And it made sense to me. And I started thinking, hey, I kind of believe these things. This, they have something here. And it had recipes in there. And I started making the recipes out of the cookbook. And I had grown up in a household that was pretty much meat, hot dogs, hamburgers, steak, whatever, on a regular basis. And I love meat. I do. I love meat. And the Hare Krishna cookbook introduced me into how to start making vegetables and non-meat dishes that taste fantastic. And that was great. And about 2 years later, no, not 2 years, it couldn't be, it was a year later, I'm sorry. A year later, there was a restaurant that opened up in like the side alley down there in State College where I was at. And it was a little Indian all-you-can-eat place that was completely vegetarian. That was my first introduction to Indian food. And oh my goodness, the moment I put that first dal in my mouth, I've had a love affair with Indian food ever since. I could not believe food could taste like this. It was amazing. Again, another transformative experience. The spices, the herbs, the flavors that came together in that food were just mind-blowing. And it's kind of interesting that it took me probably another 2 decades before I would get up the confidence to start making Indian food at home, because I loved Indian food. So it was wonderful. Now, when on the 2 days before my wedding to my wife, Erin, we decided to do a secret gift for each other. And her gift to me was, I had never been to, I've only been to New York City like once in my life. And she had gone to school in the Bronx at Fordham in New York City. And so she had lived there for 6 years, I think, 6 or 7 years. And so she took me to a taping of The Daily Show. And before the taping, we went to this vegetarian restaurant. I forget what it was called. It had Zen in the name. I don't know if it's still in there. But they had used gluten and made meat alternative dishes. I had a duck breast there that was completely vegetarian. That was mind-blowingly awesome. And I was like, I can't believe you could do this and make it taste almost like duck, but still taste awesome. And I tried to replicate that at home, working with gluten, sitting there. Like, you take some flour, you put it in water, you mix it together, form like a dough in there, but you add more water so that you're kind of like getting rid of everything but the gluten, and you're rinsing it kind of frequently. So in the end, you just have this like ball of gluten. And needless to say, I had no idea what I was doing. It was way beyond my skills at that point, but it was all right trying to make vegetarian chicken wings, quote, but it just wasn't the same, not like this place. She also had exposed me to sushi for the first time, vegetarian sushi, and I was very impressed. I was kind of amazed at sushi. Like, how raw food put together with some cooked rice could taste so good. Like, everybody's like, yeah, it's raw fish. No, this was like amazing. Now, soon after we got married, we went to Mexico on our trip. And as our honeymoon, Cozumel, I kind of fell off the vegetarian wagon at that point. It started with a little slip and slide. I was like, well, I'll eat fish because I love to fish. And I had killed fish by my own hand. And I justified it by saying, well, since I did it in the past by my own hand and I would do it now, I'm comfortable with doing that, all right, I'll eat fish. But that's when, soon after that, I actually tried real sushi for the first time. And wow, just the textures and the flavors on that just blew. That was very memorable. Again, sushi. First time I ate sushi. And then since then, I kind of slid. It went to chicken, and it went back. So I am not a vegetarian anymore. I apologize to those people who are vegetarians. Very noble cause. I am a despicable omnivore, and that's where it is. So now, I had this point in my life started to enjoy cooking, started to enjoy food. My wife's mother, we would go over to her house every Sunday, and that's where I started that's where I really started to realize you could have really good food and make it in your home. I mean, like, restaurant quality food. My mother-in-law is an amazing cook, and it showed, because I got so freaking fat after the next decade. Like, I had gone from, when I met my wife, I was about 195 pounds. I worked out a lot, exercised and stuff. And at my peak, I think I ballooned up to like 260 pounds, right? And it was, you know, it just wasn't my mother-in-law's cooking. I ate like a pig. I still exercised. You know, I would run. I've been running since I was 18. But it was food portion and, you know, going to Chinese buffets and stuff like that. You know, it's just, I ate a little more than a lot more than I should have. Soda was a big thing, stuff like that. And it wasn't until, you know, a couple of years ago that I said, this has got to stop. And now I'm back down to like 190. So I'm back down to my pre-marriage weight. But I'm still trying to get better at that. But anyway, like, she just made the most amazing food. And I said to myself, I can do this at home. Right, I think I could do this at home. And then my wife and I had said, after our second daughter was born, we decided that we're going to have some date nights and we're going to go to a decent restaurant, not Chinese buffet, not, you know, Ruby Tuesdays or some chain restaurant. Let's see what we can get in the Lehigh Valley. And the first place that we went to was called the Manor House. And that was a French cuisine. And that was it right there. That was another formative experience. I'm like, hey, this is amazing food. Not a chain restaurant, you know, foods from like Cheddar's or Ruby Tuesday or whatever, good food, diner food, good food and stuff. But this took it to a whole other level, the Manor House. And at that, it was like, that was the start of, if I'm going to pay somebody to make me food, I want a memorable experience coming out of there. I want to come out of that restaurant feeling like either I could make this or this is way above my level and it was outstanding. Always trying to achieve that goal. Now, that's not to say that I don't appreciate a good diner. I absolutely do. Diner food, I love it. I love the little mom and pop pizza shops, you know. I've eaten fast food. I still do sometimes. I like Taco Bell. But, you know, when I eat those places, I don't want to go to McDonald's because that I look at that as a meal that I'm excited to have. It's usually I got to get something in my stomach just to hold me over till something else, and this is the only option available, right? Now, I will say, if you stop doing that, occasionally you might want to say, well, let's go to McDonald's because I haven't had it in a while, and I do love a McDonald's cheeseburger. Yeah, but then you feel kind of crappy afterwards. But anyway, Manor House really, really took it to the next level for me for restaurants. And ever since then, that has been our goal when my wife and I go out or we take a trip, that we want to eat at places that are going to blow us away. And we've been very well successful at that. But there's always that level of disappointment when you go to a restaurant that you expect to be blown away, but you aren't. And at this stage of my culinary skills, the returns become a lot less. That if I go to a restaurant, I want to be awed, and I want to have something and a new experience all the time. And that sets a really high bar. If I go to a restaurant and I come out of there saying I could have made a better meal than I got out of there, I kind of get disappointed, right? And it very rarely happens to be that way. If I'm going to a diner or a restaurant or generally like a non-chain place, it very rarely happens. Right. And there's always also levels of expectation that I have. But anyway, I'm veering way off a track on all this. But those are my most memorable meals that brought me to where I am today with my culinary skills. And I like to think that where I'm at right now is my goal with every meal that I make is I want it. If I were to die tomorrow, I would not be disappointed in the meal I made the night before. That it tastes as good as a restaurant or better. It's the best that I can make it. That is my goal. And also, I recognize the fact that most of the time, my food tastes great, but it looks freaking ugly. It does. I make food. I look at it. I use a recipe. I look at that little fancy recipe and the picture of what they have on the website, and I look at what I made, and what I made tastes wonderful. It tastes amazing, but it don't look like that. Tends to start to be more like browns and oranges and stuff like that, but I'm trying to get a little better at that. Cooking, presentation skills, just general skills overall in that, and that's a whole other thing that goes into cooking. So that's kind of like what I want to bring to this show is little tips and tricks and techniques that I have picked up along the way that have taken my food that I think and that the people that I feed, my family and my friends and my neighbors on a regular basis, that they say, that was amazing. That was great. That was delicious. You should do a cooking show. It was so good that make them want to come back for more. And we'll see where this goes. And hopefully this wasn't too long and I didn't bore you. But I plan to have another episode coming out soon, talking about the tools that I use. So I appreciate you spending time with me today, walking down this little nostalgic journey of where I came from and what I hope to give to you. One of the things that I will leave you with, and I'll bring this up more in other episodes, is some of the influences that I've had in the past couple of years on my culinary skills. First one has absolutely been Stella Culinary with Chef Jacob Burton. StellaCulinary.com has a fantastic series of videos, and he has a book called F-Step Flavor out there, and he's been doing more videos on himself. He's not with Stella Culinary. Chef Jacob Burton is not with Stella Culinary anymore. He's doing stuff on his own. He got me into stocks and making pizza, and probably the biggest thing is baking sourdough bread. I've been doing that for like the past 5 years, almost every day. So I make a ton of bread, all because of Stella Culinary. In fact, I have to go make the bread now. I'm about 10 minutes overdue of when I need to make the next loaf. Get that going. StellaCulinary.com. The Food Kitchen, The Food Lab, Kenji Lopez. His stuff is putting together really like the Food Lab book absolutely should be in your library if you have it, if you want to take it to the next level. Great stuff right there. So those two places. Can I think of anything else right now? I'd say my mother-in-law is cooking, but you ain't gonna get that. And I'm sure everybody has a family member that does fantastic cooking. But check out those two things, The Food Lab and Stella Culinary. Of course, there's Alton Brown, and he's always been fantastic. I've picked up a lot from him. That's where we are. So, again, this was Tales from the Kitchen. My name is Dan Washko, and I hope that you enjoyed this. Thank you.